Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Well, thank you so much to my new program manager. I haven't heard her yet, but I'm just really thrilled at the work she's doing. We've been spending a lot of time the first part of the year because this is our 10-year anniversary. So we've been making a lot of changes to our program and to our websites, which I'm sure that my wonderful interns and my staff have been doing a really great job since I've been off with tooth extractions. But anyway, today I have a great guest to start out this quarter with. And we're going to be talking to her on our A Taste of Ink live program. And everyone has heard A Taste of Ink for a while. So I'm putting it out here. I am doing a little contest on a tagline for A Taste of Ink live. If you're interested, send it to my email at info@verticalmediagroup.com. And that's vertical with a K. And I have three wonderful set of books to send you. If I pick you as the best tagline. So today we'd like to welcome Sarah Winokur. I hope I'm saying that right, Sarah. She is the author of Double Blind, due out in March, and she's a PhD, a molecular geneticist, whose research has been published in many scientific journals, including Human Molecular Genetics, Nature Genetics, and Cell Stem Cell. She's also an ovarian cancer thriver. I love that word. She has dedicated her life to family, friends, travel, and her second career as an author of historical fiction and forensic mysteries. Double Blind, The Icelandic Manuscript Murders, is her novel, and we'll be talking to her today about Double Blind. Welcome, Sarah.
Well, thank you so much, Celeste. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yes. And it was wonderful getting your information as well, because I was like, oh, my goodness, we have so many things in common.
I know. So, I saw that too.
Yeah, I was reading through your website as well, and I was like, oh, my God, we have so many things in common. I haven't been to Iceland yet, but I'm a huge Nordic movie fan. So
right.
I just love the movies. I try to find all those movies. My daughter's just like, you know, Mom, do you ever watch anything that's just American and no subtitles? I'm like, no, I like these movies. So, so anyway.
Yep.
Oh, wow. So anyway, let's talk about Double Blind for a minute. So I was scanning through the book, And I'm looking forward to actually reading more of the book. It's actually something that I'm very interested in reading. I love
Great.
That you have the whole DNA part as well. You know, that was my favorite subject in college, was taking anything
uh-huh.
that had to do with genetics. At one time, I wanted to be a genetic counselor, but then you know how your life just changes. So it
yeah.
becomes other stuff, but I still have a great passion for it. So when we're talking
right.
about
so
double blind and what is
common.
I'm sorry, say it again.
I said, so we do have a lot in common.
Oh, yeah. You know, I started out wanting to do medical anthropology, and at the time that I wanted to take that particular subject, there were no curriculums for it.
Right.
So me
well,
and my teacher put together some classes.
Right. I do think that it's important in life to have, you know, several interests, and whether we follow one as a career or not, they can still be
Absolutely.
Lifelong passions and interests.
Well, you know, that's why I love your book, because actually it's a great, you know, I use a lot of my studies as well in my writing. So I was like, oh my goodness, I'm just going to enjoy this book here. So I mean, I really have some, yeah, I really was like, oh, I got some great questions to ask her. So, so I want to say that, first of all, this book was inspired by a real company in Iceland that databases DNA for the citizens in Iceland, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. There is a privately held company in Iceland. It's called Decode Genetics, and it's actually
mm-hmm.
a subsidiary now of Amgen, which is based here in California. And this
right.
company,
mm-hmm.
it's not a criminal database like we have here in the U.S. and many countries, but it consists, it's a database that consists of DNA that's been voluntarily contributed by the majority of Icelanders. And
mm-hmm.
their objective is basically to use that DNA to identify mutations in the DNA that can contribute to common diseases like heart disease and Alzheimer's and cancer. And it's
okay.
easier to make those kind of connections in a pool of individuals that are fairly closely related. And Iceland is a very
mm-hmm.
has a very relatively small population of only about 300,000 people, and
mm-hmm.
most of them are somewhat related. So it's sort of an interesting genetic pool, and easier to do those kinds of studies in.
So how did you find this company? I mean, I know you work in genetics, so how did you decide that you wanted to write this book and you actually went to Iceland?
Yes, I did. Well, let me start with saying, so yes, I am a geneticist, and I worked for 25
mm-hmm.
years doing molecular genetics, identifying genes that are involved in various genetic diseases. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, in the course of my career, I had heard of this company. Unfortunately, several years ago, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. I'm fine now. My doctor thinks I'm going to be fine. It's been quite a number
mm-hmm.
of years. And
mm-hmm.
so I think it's in the past. But I did take a step back from doing the research and decided to sort of reinvent myself. And I
okay.
knew that I love doing research. But I no longer wanted to do research at the bench. I decided
right.
to do research that would inform a book. So I decided to
right.
take on a
mm-hmm.
new challenge of writing a fictional novel. So I
okay.
had heard of this. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I had heard of this company and
mm-hmm.
Made the connection to be able to go there and tour the company, which was super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of being there in Iceland, I just fell in love with the country itself and the people and its history and its culture and all the quirks. And I
mm-hmm.
just thought this would be a great setting for a novel.
Well, I know reading through your site and in reading the book and just how you describe just the things in the book and Iceland, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna have to go to Iceland. I've been wanting to go, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna have to go now.
Oh,
I'm really
well,
gonna have to go.
Plan something out because I've been there many times now, and I could certainly give you some tips.
I was gonna say how difficult. Here we go. We're both like, okay. I was going to say, how difficult was it to weave real science and facts into a book? Because I know that, I came from a background where there's a lot of writing and research. And although I had these stories in my head, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, sometimes you've done so much research and writing. I know when I got out of school, I mean, I had different teachers in college give you like 8 books here, 7 books here, 10 books here. And when I graduated, I must have laid on the floor in my house for about a week. I would get up, get dressed, turn TV on, and lay on the floor. And I was like, I think I'm supposed to be doing something. But it was really funny. And I, you know, realized a lot of people went through that, even like leaving when you leave your job and you have work like that. So how did you get the motivation to, you know, do, you know, first of all, how did you weave the real science and facts into your book and get the motivation to write it?
Well, you know, weaving the facts and the science into the book actually came very naturally to me. The main character, her name is Brinja Pell's daughter, is a forensic geneticist, and she uses the DNA database to solve crimes. So we sort of speak the same language. And
okay.
I'm pretty familiar with her knowledge of
terms and right, absolutely.
Of course. Yeah. So
but even with the terms of science, well, even with the different terms though, I didn't find it a difficult read. If I was just a person picking up your book and reading it, you have a real knack for writing it in such a way that it's not so technical that you just, you know, kind of takes the joy out of reading a story.
Thank you for saying that. I really did put a lot of effort into making the science very accessible in a sort of fun and engaging way. I didn't want to, slow down the pace of the book. I wanted to, you know, not everyone has a background in science. And so I guess part of what my objective was to sort of, you know, inform people as to what genetics is all about, but in a fun kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So I was careful
Absolutely.
To use a lot of technical terms. Or when I did use technical terms, I described them in mostly in dialogue.
Okay, all right. So now I know you use some ancient texts in your writing. And, you know, because I was reading some, I'm a huge mythology fan as well. And so I was kind of doing a little research, you know, while I was reading your book, I was kind of like, oh, let me go research that. So when you were going to through these texts, how did you do it in an Icelandic setting? I mean, I'm sure using the library and doing some research, you were able to kind of go through and peruse some of these texts. So, but what made you want to use the particular one? And I can't pronounce it, so you'll have to help me.
I know. It is a real manuscript, the one that I refer to in the book.
Right.
It's called the
Okay.
So, there is a body of literature, medieval literature in Iceland called the Icelandic sagas. And these are sort of early, they're sort of early historical fiction that were written in the 13th century about real events and real people in Iceland in the 9th, 10th, and 11th century. And they're really quite dramatic and involve a lot of passion and drama and honor and revenge, and they're really great to read. And on one of my visits Iceland. They're very precious. They're really considered to be Iceland's, you know, national treasures, because they,
right.
you know, Iceland doesn't have a lot of, you know, natural resources and gold and silver and so forth. So they,
mm-hmm.
they're very
right.
proud
mm-hmm.
of their literary heritage. And so
mm-hmm.
on one of my visits to Iceland, I was lucky enough to be able to go down into the vault of this manuscript institute and actually hold and look through one of these ancient texts. And
wow,
that's when the light bulb went off. I know that it was so cool. And that's when the light bulb went off and I decided, okay, I'm going to use clues from these ancient manuscripts as the key to solving the mystery of double blind. I'm going to have little snippets from these manuscripts sent to.
Well, you sound like you sound like one of these movies that we watch, like National Treasure. That, you know, you're in this place and you go through this book and you start getting all these ideas. I mean, seriously, it sounds like you had just a real adventure, you know, while you were there and doing the research.
It was really sort of like chills going down your spine, you know. And I was just so fortunate to know somebody that was happened to be studying medieval literature, and so she spoke to the manuscript master, and they took me down into the cellar, and I put on these, you know, white gloves, and we were able to peruse through this really old ancient manuscript. It was pretty
mm-hmm.
cool.
I bet it was. So I noticed when I looked at your website, you had that great video playing as a, you know, the opening to your website. Who did that video for you? Because it really plays as if you're, you know, it really plays as something that is like a real adventure you're getting ready to have and jump into that.
Well, I have to say I've been working with Black Chateau Enterprises.
Okay.
And they
uh-huh.
put together the website and did a phenomenal job. So I have to give a shout out.
Mm-hmm. It is phenomenal. Yeah, it is. It
yeah.
really is phenomenal. So because Nordic thrillers and mysteries are such a hot thing right now, and I'm not really sure if it's a hot thing because more stories are being written, but I think it's more of, you know, our media so far out there and our social media that now we're able to hook into other countries and their movies and their genre. So you have quite a few followers on Goodreads who have reviewed
yeah.
your book and gave it some really amazing reviews. So, you know, did you have any intent of your book dropping in the middle of this current, you know, phase of people loving Nordic thrillers?
You know, I'm not sure that was my intent. I just happen to be really hooked on Nordic noir. I have
uh-huh.
to admit, I pretty much binge read it. And Henning Mankell, I don't know if you know that author, he got me started with the Kurt Wallander series, and I've
mm-hmm.
pretty much
okay.
been hooked up. So I guess I just enjoy reading them. I have really enjoyed my visits there, and it's just such a perfect setting for a mystery
mm-hmm.
in which the beginning of Double Blind, this young boy disappears from a fjord, and it's sort of, you look out on these landscapes and they're endless, and it really reflects the sense of loss and desolation and desperation. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So,
I was really happy. I'm sorry.
No, I want to hear. Were you really happy?
Yeah, I got a review from Blue Ink Reviews, and they gave it a
uh-huh.
notable book review and compared it to Stieg Larsson's Girl with a Ragged.
Oh, really?
Tattoo. No.
Yeah,
so.
I love that series.
Yeah. So.
That's awesome.
So
that's an awesome review
yeah.
to compare it like that. Yeah. That is an
Absolutely.
Awesome review. Yeah, really. Wow. Okay. Well, I want to ask you, so, you know, you do you believe, because, you know, we know that the young lady in the book is a geneticist or working on some things. And I want to ask you a few questions that have to do with DNA. So, you know, do you believe that these databases could be used against people when it comes to insurance?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Celeste. And I do hope that readers of my book, Double Blind, will consider the issue of DNA privacy. That's one of the sort of controversial issues I wanted to bring up and have people think about. Currently there's something like 30 million people have submitted their DNA to DNA testing companies. And those companies, they do have a privacy policy, but more than the great majority, something like 80% of users agree to allow those companies to use their DNA for research purposes. And once your DNA and your DNA profile, you know, it's masked. So it's not linked to your personal information, theoretically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But once it's in the hands of like a third party, it's sort of out of your control. And yes, there is a danger. Currently, we do have a law in the United States. It's called the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, where your genetic information can't be used to discriminate against you when it comes to insurance. It doesn't apply to life insurance or disability or long-term care. And
interesting.
There definitely are risks to, submitting your DNA to these companies. Everyone does have the option of, once you get the results back from these companies, you can ask them to dispose of your DNA and delete your profile. So it's something to consider, because although theoretically it can't be used to discriminate, you know, in terms of insurance and employment, I think one never knows. And we certainly don't know, you know, what the case is going to be in the future. You know, say if those companies are bought or sold, you know, the privacy policies could change. And
absolutely. Yeah, there is. So do you believe we can circumvent our genetic heritage?
I think to a great degree, yes. Yes, I think we can. You know, there's certain traits and features that we're, you know, kind of stamped with in terms of our underlying genetic DNA. You know, like eye color or how tall or how short we are. You know, for eye color, there's something like 2 or 16 genes that contribute to it. But for height, there's something like 4,000 genes that contribute to it. So you can imagine for behavior or personality, I think that have such a much greater influence on our personality and behavior than our genes would dictate. I think our outlook and how we relate to the wider world and our attitude and our lifestyle. So to a large degree, I think we can.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can too. To exactly, you know, what you're saying too. I do think we can too in some things. But I also feel that there's some, there could be some environmental effects to it as well, that we may not pay attention to. Because there's so much, there's so much in our air and soil now. I think that's another issue that's out there as well. I think it's a fascinating genetic study is fascinating, but I do think at some times that I wonder if some scientists or researchers may be going too far with it without adequate research or information behind that, you know. So I'm the person in my family that always creates these weird scenarios.
referring to the effect of our environment on our DNA?
Yes. I think it has a huge effect on us.
Yes, and I think there's just so much we don't know.
Even in terms of
genetics. You know, we can, you know, sequence the DNA. We know, like, the sequence of the nucleotides. But we're just really at the beginning of understanding how it interacts with the environment, how it affects us,
Absolutely. So what were the challenges in writing Double Blind for you?
Well, the easy part for me was the plot structure for Double Blind. I think because I was a scientist and kind of organized and structured, it was easier for me to sort of lay out the plot that put all the pieces together and made sense. But the challenging part for me was character and characterization and getting that like emotional aspect and their reactions and their desires. And I worked really hard at that. My left brain tended to sort of take control sometimes, and I had to, like shut it out.
Yeah,
and that was
rein it back in.
Exactly. Just be quiet for a little while, brain.
Right.
Let that right brain work. And so once I figured that out, I knew I had a novel.
Okay. All right. And so how did you get your characters? I know. My funniest joke that I always hear in the writer community is like, don't mess with me or I'm going to kill you off in my book, or, you know. So I'm like, you know, so how did you get your characters? Are there any people that you took some of the characteristics from, or were they completely made up?
You know, most of them were really made up just out of, you know, thin cloth. But a couple of the, I'm not going to name any names, but a couple of the individuals worked. So there's a detective, a forensic detective that's kind of a foil for Brinja in the novel. And he's older and he's jealous of her because he feels that he should have gotten her job, and didn't feel that a young, because the protagonist Brinja, she's quite young, she's only 27, and he just didn't feel that a young person, much less a woman, should have that job. And you know, in my early days the scientific career, there were individuals that maybe felt the same way. But most of the individuals, I had fun just kind of making them up.
Well, I do understand the part about telling your brain to, you know, your left brain, like, yeah, I need you to be quiet for a minute, because I know you experience this, because once you get all your characters, you know, pretty well laid out and whatnot, and then your character starts saying, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. You know, and you're like, yes, you're going to do that, you know?
Yeah. Right. That's right. They kind of start to take up lives of their own.
Yeah, absolutely. They really do, you know? So, and I haven't yet met a writer that would say anything different, you know? It becomes a tug of war sometimes, depending on where you want to go. So I totally get that part.
Yeah, But it's also a positive, you know, because they kind of come up with things that maybe you hadn't thought about or, you know, thinking, yeah, that's cool. That would work. Yeah.
So what do you think, what do you do in your private life that really gets you going and motivated and keeps you inspired? What is the activity that you do that keeps that, you know, going and keeps that fire going, that passion inside of you?
Well, I have been very fortunate in that I've been able to travel a lot. I mentioned I've been to Iceland quite a few times, but I've also been, you know, to Asia and South America and Africa. And I just love being immersed in other cultures and seeing how, you know, just how people live and the foods they eat and, the, you know, the beliefs that they believe in and the communities that they develop. And just, I just, that really stimulates me.
And your travel, what was your weirdest food you ever ate?
Well, I'll have to go back to Iceland on that one. They have, well, you know, in South America, they have roasted guinea pig, but I did not participate.
Okay.
But in Iceland, they don't really eat this any longer, but in the days, in earlier days where when food was, you know, very hard to come by because it's a very harsh environment and you can't grow vegetables and livestock die off because of the weather.
Right.
And, so they used to capture sharks and then bury them on, you know, in the earth underground for 100 or more days to let the shark meat just ferment because it contains some, you know, toxic materials that have to leach out of the shark. So fermented shark meat. And so I did taste that. I forced myself to taste that. And, you know, as most things, it wasn't quite as bad as you would think, but I certainly wouldn't taste it again.
Right. Okay.
And I don't know that's just one example.
Yeah, I know when I went to Ireland, we took a group of writers to Ireland one year, and it was really funny because we were saying that every time we went to a restaurant or we went to have lunch or even breakfast, we say, well, you get your entree and your entree came with either fries or mashed potatoes, but then they would sit more vegetables on the table and it would be a big old bowl of steamed potatoes. It was like, okay.
Right.
And you get so much food. It was like, by the time we got to like the third day, we were like, okay, can we just not have that and that, because it was just so much food, you know, when you would sit down and eat.
Yeah.
So I said, you order a pizza, it comes with fries. You order Chinese food, it comes with fries. So it's very true about them eating a lot of potatoes.
Yeah, they just can't grow. Well, I guess they can now, but they just difficult to grow, you know, a lot of vegetables in that kind of environment.
Absolutely. That's true. That's very true. So what was the rewards in completing your novel?
For me, the reward in completing it was really just a great sense of accomplishment that I actually did it. You know, I've written a lot of scientific articles, and when I first sat down to write Double Blind, I thought, oh, well, this is going to be really fun. I've got a plot. I know it's going to work really well being set in Iceland. So, you know, how hard can it be? So, it's quite different than writing scientific articles.
Right.
So there was definitely a learning curve. I joined a number of critique groups, and I was really open to feedback you know, I don't want to say criticism because that always has such a negative connotation, but,
right.
You know, I was really open to, you know, learning about, you know, what I could do better. So,
right.
So
uh-huh.
it did take me several years to write the book.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because of the learning curve. I mean, it's not as if I sat down every day to write. A lot of it was research and learning craft, particularly craft involving, you know, characterization.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I just felt a big sense of accomplishment, I guess you would say.
I you know what, I bet that is a sense of accomplishment because you're turning, you know, like you said, even though you've done a lot of scientific writing, this is a different type of writing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I believe, yeah, I can definitely, for all the research and your travels and, you know, and then, you know, going to the different groups to kind of help you with things, you know, it would be a huge sense of accomplishment. Just to complete it. And now you're looking at it, you know, coming out to the world in March.
Yeah.
And I would say that's great. You know, that's just great.
Yeah.
So on a personal level about you, I know you're going to be even more excited when you get the book in your hand and you're just looking at it, you just have them send you that first book. And then you're just looking at it, you know, and you're just like, oh, my goodness, there's my name.
Yeah.
You know,
that's about to happen. And I'm really looking forward to that.
You know what? Congratulations. I know you are looking forward to that. I know that's the way I would feel. And that's kind of how we feel, you know, on the radio. And I said, we're going to be syndicated soon. And I said, oh, I would get a membership to a satellite radio just so I could hear myself on the radio. I'm like, it would just be just a thrill.
Absolutely. So, and you deserve it.
Such a huge accomplishment. So what you've done, that's a huge accomplishment when you think about it. It's totally different. So
you
reinvented yourself as an author. You know, you left research and reinvented yourself as an author and on a personal level after surviving ovarian cancer. And I read your little, blog on there, and it was really some similar things even for me. I'm going to use your word. I'm a thriver from breast cancer.
Oh,
and,
you are.
Okay. Yes. And it was very, I was reading your story because that's exactly how, you know, I live, I enjoy my life, I'm very grateful, and I get a kick out of my family. I stayed with my daughter when I was going through treatment, but my little three-year-old granddaughter, she was so wonderful. I don't want to say that she's a baddie, but she's a daredevil. late at night walker child in the family, and she keeps us all on our toes. But when I was oh my gosh, she does. And so you know, all the kids had to sanitize their hands before they could, you know, touch me. So she would get up early in the morning, she'd sanitize her hands, and she'd come in my room and put her hands on my face and said, "How you doing today, Grandma?"
That's
my little heart now. It's my little partner in crime, I call her. So, so I was reading about your son and your husband, and I was thinking that, you know, it's such a great encouragement, you know, even though there's a lot you keep private to yourself. It's just a great encouragement to have your family just really come and stand with you, you know, while you're going through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
and I think, you know, it just really enhances our gratitude, I think, that kind of a situation. I mean, I never take them for granted, but boy, did they pull through.
So how did you get to the thought that I'm going to reinvent myself? I mean, because it sounds like going through the cancer, And just the perspective that you have now, did you, and actually reinventing yourself, it's interesting you said that, because when I came out of mine, I said to myself, well, you really can't go back to your old life. It's such a different, weird thing, you know, it's just so weird. And I say, you actually do have to reinvent your life. So what made you, you know, going through that, what made you get to that point and you say, I'm just going to reinvent myself?
You know, I think when we're all faced with a situation like that, you realize, I mean, we always know in the back of our minds that life is not infinite. But, you know, when you're faced with a diagnosis like that and a diagnosis like yours, you sort of have to think, okay, what if I did just have a few years left? Mm-hmm. What would I really, what would I really have wanted, you know, what would I really like to try to do? Something different. I could have gone back, and I did go back and work part-time in the lab, but I thought I really wanted to take on a new challenge. And, you know, one of the things about scientists is sometimes we don't do such a great job of communicating what is going on in science and, you know, what science is all about. And I thought, well, I'm going to write a fun, you know, fast-paced mystery, but I do want to incorporate some of the science in there in a fun, engaging way so that, you know, I was trying to do, you know, sort of what other people have done, like John Grisham did for the law in his legal thrillers and Tom Clancy does for the military and espionage. So I in a part, I wanted to make science accessible and exciting and actually, you know, an integral part of the mystery. So I thought, well, I'm going to just take on this new challenge. And it was fun for the most part.
How did your family think about you, you know, saying that, you know, I'm going to reinvent myself, I'm going to become an author, and, you know, after all these years of working as a scientist and researcher, what were their response?
They were so supportive. I mean, I think that they, I think it's good for, you know, I have three children. I call them children, but they're in their 20s. You know, and it's good for them to see that, okay, even when you're a little bit older, you can take on new challenges and delve into new worlds that you might not, you know, have been familiar with. So they were really supportive. And, you know, my poor husband has read this book 5 bazillion times without complaining. So they were really, really supportive and still are.
Oh, that's really great. And, you know, that's funny your husband did that. I remember getting up early and reciting my poetry over and over and over again. And if I was putting it to music, I would play the music over and over and over again. And I remember my husband got up and he made me some coffee, and I was getting ready to play it again, and he was reciting the whole thing, and I just started laughing. I'm like, okay. But he was like, I know, it's like he heard, and it was so hilarious, and we just started laughing. But that's actually such a great thing for your family to be so encouraging and so motivated. And just, you know, reading some of the things you said, and I think you do. And part of reinventing yourself, because that's what I thought. I thought to myself, I said, I really want to make more time with my family. I really want to do more traveling, and I really want to make those phone calls to family, you know, because we get so tied up in our work, and we just get, you know, when you look up, the time has gone by, you know. So most definitely, I definitely can, you know, relate to that. And so I hear that you have a strong sense of gratitude, and your perspective is even different now.
And also, I think I think you also realize, I don't, you know, I've kind of have a bit of a type A personality where I like to be in control.
Right.
I think a situation like that makes you realize you really only have so much control over things.
Uh-huh.
And it's really taught me to be a little bit more accepting and patient and do what I could do. But, you know, the rest was sort of up to fate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what are some of your new upcoming projects you have that you can tell us about?
Well, I am in the midst of writing a second book. I mean, Double Blind certainly can stand on its own. But my love affair with Iceland is not over yet, and so I'm writing a historical fiction, historical mystery, about a real event that took place in the Westman Islands, which is this sort of remote archipelago off of Iceland, in which the Barbary pirates from North Africa captured something like 400 Icelanders and took them back to Morocco and Algiers as slaves. And it's going to be a historical mystery that surrounds that event.
Well, I sure can't wait to hear that one. I can't wait to read that one. You have to make sure I get a shout out when it's ready. That sounds, because it really sounds interesting. I would really love to read that one.
Yeah, this is something, you know, the more you learn about a country, there's a lot of material there. So I'm
that's another reason I love your book, because I'm a big history buff as well. So, you know, when I'm reading about something, I love hearing about whatever history or mythology or, you know, anything in the culture that just is just interesting. Like I said, when I was reading your book, I was also on my internet looking up stuff. So I was like, this is just really interesting. I mean, everybody, that's probably, like you said, the A personality in me just wants to know it all, you know. But it's like, just read the book. I was really enjoying it. Yeah, I was really, really enjoying it. So I know you can relate to that.
Yeah.
So do you have any upcoming events?
Well, the book itself is coming out March 31st. And prior to that, I will be on two panels at the California Creative Writing Conference the end of February. Also have a couple other interviews, including Black Chateau's Books That Make You. And then I'll be signing at the LA Festival of Books in April. And I'm sure as the book launch gets closer, there'll be many others.
Oh, that's fantastic. And if you'd like to go to Sarah's website, it's www.sarah.winokur.com. And you can read more information about Sarah and get more information about Double Blind. So one of the things I do, Sarah, when before I end the program is I ask the author to give us any advice to new authors that may be listening to this program that you feel is important for any new author getting ready to start writing. And this is totally coming from your point of view and your personal experience.
Right. I would say to not be afraid, just to dive in and start writing, you know, find the joy in it. And don't listen to that part of you that's saying, oh, you don't really know what you're doing, or you can't do this right, because there is no right. There are no rules. It's you just write from the heart. And I would also say that I think it's important to embrace feedback and criticism and critique, and it's very don't be afraid of that. It's people are trying to improve, you know, help you rather than you know, put you down. So one of the best things I did do was to join a critique group, and I think that was really instrumental in my early days.
That's,
you know, I
really
guess,
good advice.
I was just reading the news today, you know, and there is some astronaut that had just returned from the International Space Station. She'd been up there for a year. And her advice to young people is do what scares you, because I thought that was pretty cool, because what scares you is actually what's meaningful to you. So dive in and meet it head on, and it'll lead
that's
you places.
That's a good way to put that. That's actually a very good way to put that. Very good way to put that. So I saw my granddaughter sent me a picture of herself. My 11-year-old said, sent me a picture. She's holding this big old snake. And I'm like, oh, you like snakes. And I said, okay, because there's nobody else in here that's going to hold a snake, you know. And I said, how did it feel? And she says, yeah. And she goes, well, you know, she says, the skin is actually really neat, you know. And she's telling me that. She goes, but Grandma, you haven't heard the rest of the story. And I said, what's the rest of the story? She said the snake scared her and she dropped him. I said, you dropped the snake? I said, oh, my goodness. She goes, yep. She goes, I dropped him. And so now I call her snake dropper, but I said.
So she dropped the snake, but she picked it back up?
No, the guy came and picked it up. She was like,
oh, okay.
She said her fear kicked in. She said her fear kicked in.
Well, good for her.
Right. I said, well, at least you held it for a long time. I said, I'll give you
that.
Exactly.
More than most people would ever do, right?
right. So I like the way you said that. I have to tell her that. I have to tell her when I see that is that, you know, do what you fear, you know. So she kind of gets that into her head, but we crack up on it now. But But I said it would be funny for her to turn into a veterinarian.
Yeah,
she wants
you never
to be a doctor, so. Right, you never know, right? So, but you're absolutely right about that. A lot of people I know who are actually, you know, living their passion, they did the thing that really scared them, and they did some things that were probably for most individuals, they would think, you know what, I don't want to go through that, you know? Don't want to go through the hard stuff, you know?
Yeah, but then it's so rewarding when you do.
Absolutely. Then it's so rewarding. Well, it's been a real pleasure, Sarah, to talk to you. It's really been fun. It's really a pleasure. I'm going to finish reading your book because I really, I'm not going to give anybody any, I'm not going to tell anybody anything about this book, but I'll say the first when I was reading through it, I said that you get to a point, so, oh, this is going real good. And all of a sudden there's a little shocker. And then you really start diving into the book. But so, you know, I hope everyone that's listening today, I hope you do go out and pick Sarah's book as one of your books to read in the next, you know, month. It's a really great read. It's a great story. It's exciting. It's a great adventure. And we will have Sarah in Vertical Life magazine as well in the next few days. But you'll be able to listen to this broadcast tomorrow morning. We're live now, but if you missed it, you'll be able to hear the recorded broadcast. And Sarah, thank you so much for being a guest on our program today. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. And I'm going to hold you to making sure I get that next book so I can, you know, that you hit me up in the email and say, Celeste, my next book is coming out.
Okay.
So I can definitely get it.
Thank you so much, Celeste. Yeah, thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed being on the show and talking with you.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward. Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. You know, that's what I said when I was reading. I was like, oh, my goodness, I really like Sarah. So
yeah.
Definitely, you know, yeah, I, you know, hope to get to talk to you again. And I know you're going to be at the book thing. So maybe I'll see you this year because I plan on being in California for a little bit. And I'm hoping to get to meet some of the authors that I have interviewed. So that's going to be wonderful to see you in person.
Terrific. I look forward to that.
Okay. And thank you again for being in our program. And thank you to my faithful listeners. And thank you to my research team and my team who put together this broadcast. You know, you guys are really rocking, and I really appreciate you. So hope you stay tuned for our next show. Our next show will be next Wednesday at 7 MST time, but at 6 PST Pacific time, when we'll be speaking with another author on A Taste of Ink Live. And we will be sharing more information about Sarah on our social media, about her book, where you can find her, and this program. Thank you, everybody, and have a wonderful evening.
Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you, and here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.